Welcome to the Agency of the Month, Veterans Affairs, sponsored by Battelle. Now, here's your host, Tom Temin.
Few federal departments have been under the spotlight as intensely as Veterans Affairs. Its healthcare delivery, finances, human resources, information technology have been critiqued by veterans, members of Congress, and the Government Accountability Office. Last year, after a long gap, the VA got a permanent inspector general. Michael Missel, interviewed last summer here on the Federal Drive, joins me now with an update on some of what his office has been watching. Mr. Missel, good to have you back.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be here.
Why don't we start with the Veterans Choice Program that was radically updated, I guess, by Congress a couple of years ago, and the department has struggled to kind of inculcate all of those changes into that program. What have you found there? What are you looking at?
Well, Tom, the Veterans Choice Program is an extremely important program for VA. It was enacted in August of 2014 after the problems at Phoenix were identified. Essentially, what Congress did is they funded $10 billion for veterans who had a wait time of more than 30 days or lived more than 40 miles from a facility, and told VA to implement it within 90 days. So it was a very quick implementation period, and we've looked at it pretty carefully. We issued a report in the last few weeks in which we identified some of the barriers to veterans taking advantage of the Choice Program. We looked at the first 11 months of its implementation, and what we found is that there were both administrative burdens to signing up for the Choice Program, as well as the lack of adequate provider network, meaning physicians signed up in the community to treat veterans. I would like to emphasize this was the first 11 months of the program. I understand there have been changes and enhancements made to it, and the funding for Choice is going to expire at the end of August, so Congress is going to have to decide what it wants to do going forward.
Let's talk about those administrative burdens in signing up. What do you mean by that, and what did veterans themselves face?
Well, essentially, a veteran has to opt in to the program. So what we found is for the time period we looked at, there were 1.2 million veterans added to the list, meaning that they were eligible to sign up for Choice. They then had to go through the process of filling out paperwork. The facilities had to have people there to process the paperwork. Medical records have to be transferred to the provider in the community, et cetera. So what we found, of the 1.2 million eligible, only 283,000 actually opted into the program, and of those, only 149,000 actually received an appointment. So in effect, about 13% of those eligible took advantage of Choice.
And you said VA has made some changes maybe to alleviate that situation. Are you aware of what they are or whether they're having any effect yet?
Well, one of the things we understand they've done is they've significantly increased the provider network. I believe it's up by 70-80% in terms of the number of physicians now in the network. So that's one of the barriers we found, that there weren't enough physicians for the appointments needed.
So that was something that was under VA's control, the number of doctors and providers that went into this program. It wasn't a matter of rates that VA was paying and people were turning them down. They just didn't get around to signing up providers?
Well, it could be a combination of things. We didn't look into the actual reasons why they were not able to get as many providers. And again, I would note it was the beginning of the program, and any program takes time to start up. So they have had community care programs in the past. They have had provider networks. It was making sure that the Choice Program had adequate provider networks.
I guess we've heard some indication from President Trump, more during the campaign than since the inauguration, that he wanted to expand that idea of veterans getting care where they can with VA paying. And so maybe this is a good start, should that policy come about.
Very possibly could. That's why we have a number of open projects right now where we're analyzing different aspects of the Choice Program, because as the funding expires in August, Congress is going to have to act, and hopefully we can provide information that will be helpful for that discussion.
So right now the ball is in other courts.
Correct.
We're speaking with Michael Missel, the Veterans Affairs Department Inspector General. And let's move on to the idea of financial statements. VA has had some issues there, too, in its financial statements. What have you been looking at again, and what have you found?
Well, under the Chief Financial Officers Act of 1990, we're required to do an independent audit of VA's financial statements. And we retained an independent auditing firm to do that. They did issue what's called an unmodified or clean opinion, meaning that the statements were materially accurate, but they identified 6 material weaknesses and 2 significant deficiencies, which was an increase on the number of material weaknesses and significant deficiencies from the year before. So there clearly are issues with the financial statements.
Can you be a little more specific? What were some of the deficiencies?
Sure. The 6 deficiencies have to do with information technology security controls is one. Another is education benefits accrued liability, which was a very large number in terms of what wasn't accrued. We believe that the appropriate accrual was $59.6 billion. VA ultimately agreed and changed the financial statements to add that in as an accrual. Another has to do with actuarial estimates. The chief actuary at VA actually left the agency, and they just didn't have the backup behind it. Community care obligations, how they account for and pay those obligations, again, having to do with the CHOICE program and other ones. And then 2 really big ones is financial reporting. We found that VA has a legacy system which requires too much manual input. It's called the FMS system. And then finally, the CFO organizational structure. VA is a relatively decentralized operation, and the CFO of VA doesn't have the appropriate authority over the other CFOs within VA, such as the CFO of the Veterans Health Administration, the Veterans Benefits Administration, et cetera. And so that was seen as a material weakness, that the CFO doesn't have the kind of authority that a CFO should have over an organization.
On that point of the actuarial estimates, I guess I didn't realize VA had a chief actuary, and this is someone that looks at the trends in the veterans population to try to predict what VA will be facing in the future?
That's correct. That what they do is they model for compensation, pension, burial services, and a host of others. Just so they can be prepared in the future for what VA will be facing.
And is that someone that the head of VA can hire on his or her own?
That's correct. That it doesn't require presidential appointment or Senate confirmation.
It sounds like it would be a really high priority position to have open, I would think.
It is, and actuaries are in high demand in the marketplace, so you're competing with the private sector, and they're relatively well paid. So that's always an issue as well.
All right. And on the issue of the accrual for future education benefits, that would be money that VA would presume to pay somewhere down the line as veterans take advantage of the benefit that they have but haven't used yet?
Correct. Correct.
And so how do you set aside $59.6 billion?
Well, it's going to be future funding for these programs as veterans take advantage of the education benefits for VA. So it's right now it's on the financial statements, but going forward, that would be funded out of appropriations.
And on that CFO organizational structure, as you say, there are some 3 big components of VA and then all these medical centers. So it is highly decentralized, as you point out. But under the CFO Act, isn't there one single CFO that can dictate policy and a financial setup to the rest of the components?
Under the CFO Act, VA, like other federal agencies, is required to have a chief financial officer, but it doesn't designate below the reporting structure. And what we identified in the financial statements that it's a material weakness that the CFO does not have the kind of authority that a traditional CFO does over the financial reporting structure.
And on the financial reporting system, that's probably part of that big bucket of upgrades that the VA has to do. And you can throw in many other systems, the scheduling system and a bunch of others that they haven't gotten to yet.
That's correct. And my understanding is that VA is moving to a shared services model where they will take advantage of a system at another federal agency more current and updated from the FMF system that VA currently uses.
Yes, so rather than build new, they will simply go to the shared services model, I think that's called. So all this adds up to the fact that they could not get a clean audit, or that they hopefully can?
Well, we gave them a clean audit, meaning there were no material misstatements, so that they were materially accurate. However, the controls are such that leave a lot to be desired, and they have a lot of work to do to eliminate the material weaknesses and the significant deficiencies.
So it's delivering reasonable results, but it's a pretty creaky piece of machinery.
That's one way of looking at it.
Michael Missles, Inspector General of the Veterans Affairs Department. In part two of the interview, we delve into the human capital challenges VA has struggled to deal with. I'm Tom Temin.
This is the sound of healthcare saving lives. But now healthcare needs help. Patient visits, costs, and paperwork are all spiraling. This is the sound of a team of technologists and engineers at Battelle studying big data, making healthcare healthier, improving patient outcomes. With Battelle, it can be done. Learn more at battelle.org/outcomes.
The Veterans Affairs Department's Inspector General was appointed less than a year ago. He's had plenty of work. In part two of my interview with him, Michael Missle discusses vexing personnel issues. One of them took place at the Atlanta Medical Center.
Tom, individuals who are hired by VA must be found suitable for federal employment by going through a background check. The type of background check really depends on the sensitivity and importance of the position hired. OPM does an initial screening for federal workers or upcoming federal workers, but it's really up to the facility to finalize that background check. So there could be outstanding issues. They may identify a potential issue, and it's really up to the facility to finalize those background checks. Employees can work while the background check is being finalized. We received a complaint that in the Atlanta Medical Center, there was a large backlog of unfinished background checks, and so we did a review of that, and we found that the allegation was substantiated. The records were such that we were not able to confirm the exact numbers, but we identified that in 2015, it took an average of 170 days, or almost 6 months, to complete a background check. So you had a number of people working at the Atlanta Medical Center who had not had completed background checks.
These are criminal background checks?
It's all sorts of background checks, getting into things that could impact a person's integrity to work at VA.
But they're not like national security background checks?
Not for those positions, although some people at VA do have those kind of background checks.
But it sounds like the non-security background checks take as long as security background checks, which is a big problem government-wide.
With respect to what we found, they could take longer than some of the national security checks because they weren't doing them in a timely manner.
I mean, you can pay third parties to do background checks on people, criminal background checks, financial background checks, but it costs you money.
Correct.
Is this something the VA tries to do with its own staff?
Yes, VA in a number of instances have people responsible for finishing up the background checks that OPM starts. They're generally in the HR department to do it, and then they have controls in place to make sure it's being done. We found in Atlanta the controls were just not effective.
And so what is your recommendation for fixing that particular problem?
Well, we had specific recommendations as it relates to Atlanta. But we are looking to see how widespread an issue this may be throughout VA. So we have a project going on right now where we're looking at more broadly.
Well, how can it be fixed if you have a certain number of people, a certain number of hires, and they have to check certain things and there's a growing backlog? What's the way out of that?
To make sure your controls are working, you need people who are responsible for reviewing it. You need to have checks and balances and make sure things are done. And in this situation, it wasn't done. I will note that we found one other thing in Atlanta as we were looking at this, which is VA is a drug-free workplace program. And what that means is new employees are getting drug tested, as well as others on an occasional basis or random basis. For a period of time, the coordinator of that office had left, and they hadn't filled the position, and the testing was not done for about a seven-month period. And again, we identified that as a problem, and that's one thing where they should have had controls in place, and they did not. And hopefully it's fixed now.
So some vacancies went on too long, and also there were people working, hired in the jobs that hadn't had background checks completed?
Correct, correct.
Yeah, so there's really potential time bombs, I guess, both ways.
Absolutely.
And but again, you feel that with the right controls and the right attention on this, with the resources VA has, they could actually get the background checks done in time and fill the vacancies in a timely manner?
Absolutely. And Atlanta is committed to implementing the recommendations that we made. And if they do so, we feel confident that that it will work as designed.
Michael Missel is Inspector General at Veterans Affairs. I'm Tom Temin.
This is the sound of healthcare saving lives. But now healthcare needs help. Patient visits, costs, and paperwork are all spiraling. This is the sound of a team of technologists and engineers at Battelle studying big data, making healthcare healthier, improving patient outcomes. With Battelle, it can be done. Learn more at battelle.org/outcomes.
We're speaking with Michael Missel, the Veterans Affairs Department Inspector General. All right, let's zoom out here to the big picture of Veterans Affairs. A lot of turmoil, a lot of turnover in the leadership, and now another one because of the change in administration. And overlaid on this was the Commission on Care, a major report, and it had another commission oversee its work that issued a second major report. And none of this was instigated by the Inspector General office. It really came, I guess, ultimately from Congress. But have you had interaction with any of those people that created those reports or with those reports themselves?
We have not had contact with the commission, but we obviously have looked very closely at the report that they issued and are studying, analyzing it, and determining whether there are things that we should work on from those recommendations.
Because some of them talked about how to reorganize the VA, and that's not something the IG can really look at until there's a reorganization underway. Then you can see if they're doing it properly. Are there things in there that look like you could potentially investigate them now?
Potentially, there are. Recommendations, VA is still considering how to implement some of those. And given that there, as you noted, a change of leadership at the top of VA, and there will be additional senior leaders brought in, I don't think they're very far along in terms of those recommendations.
Have you had a chance yet to spend some time with the new secretary?
I have, yes.
How did it go?
It went fine. I had a good relationship with now Secretary Shulkin when he was the Undersecretary of Health. Obviously, there are a number of issues that we discuss relating to our work and his thoughts on things. And I've already met with him, and we will be meeting on a regular basis to ensure that we're abreast of all of the issues of VA that we should be.
And as secretary, does he still wear a stethoscope?
I have not seen the stethoscope, but I guess it's possible. He had been treating patients while he was the undersecretary. I don't know if that's going to continue.
Well, we'll have to see on that one. And finally, I wanted to ask you about some of the construction issues. Again, the VA hospital in Aurora, Colorado, is what prompted a lot of inquiry. And if I recall, that management was turned over to the Army Corps of Engineers. So what have you seen there in construction and VA's ability to do its own construction in the future?
That's correct. What now is required for any major construction, which is a project over $100 million, the Army Corps of Engineers is required to manage those construction projects. VA has very old infrastructure. Construction is going to have to continue, both with respect to new facilities and doing renovations of the older facilities. So we are putting together a group that will focus just on major construction at VA so we can stay attuned to the issue and try to get ahead of the issue as well.
I think that was something the commission had noted, is that many of the facilities are old, and at some point hospitals get too old to be able to be renovated to up-to-date standards and have to be replaced. So this could be something that's going to really grow going down the line.
I think that's right. I've been to a number of facilities, and when you speak to leadership at those facilities, a number of them talk about their aging infrastructure and the limitations on what they can do.
One other thing I wanted to check with you about, there's an open criminal case right now with someone who stole drugs from a VA facility. I imagine that's a ongoing danger and something that VA spends a lot of time trying to avoid. What's your work there shown you?
Sure. Obviously, VA has a significant amount of drugs in its pharmacies. It has a very large pharmaceutical program. It purchases billions of dollars worth of medicines, drugs every year. They do have controls over their pharmacies, but unfortunately, we've seen in a few instances where those controls have not worked as designed. The case you're talking about, there were three individuals who worked in a pharmacy who have now been charged criminally with stealing drugs at the pharmacy and then selling them on the open market. We are very vigilant in this area and have a number of active investigations.
Are people mostly stealing the opioids? Because that seems to be the growth drug now.
They're stealing the opioids and other narcotics, as well as some of the less dangerous drugs.
Sounds like there's probably technological fixes or updates that can be done to prevent that kind of thing, too.
Yes. Yes, that is correct, and I know VA is trying to work on it.
Michael Missel is Inspector General at Veterans Affairs. You can find a link to both parts of the interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Agency of the Month, Veterans Affairs, sponsored by Battelle, on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency of the Month.